Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
What if you could sit beside King David in his final days and hear the whole story in his own words? From shepherd boy to giant slayer, from hunted outlaw to ruler of the United Kingdom, David's life was anything but simple. And David, Man After God's Own Heart, by Dr. Lewis McCall, takes us inside the triumphs, betrayals, civil wars, family rebellion, and deep spiritual struggles that defined Israel's greatest king. So how did a flawed man earn the title of Man After God's Own Heart? And what can modern leaders learn from his victories and his failures? This is more than a retelling of Bible history. It's a deeply human portrait of leadership under pressure, moral failure, political conflict, faith in exile, and finishing well. Dr. McCall brings a lifetime of global experience to his work, with a 36-year career in the U.S. Department of State, serving in over 60 countries. He now writes with the freedom to share the faith that has guided his life in diplomacy, ministry, and public service, bringing timeless biblical figures to life through storytelling that inspires faith and reflection as he blends biblical history, cultural insight, and Christian devotion. We welcome back to This Week in America, Dr. Lewis McCall, author of David, Man After God's Own Heart. Dr. McCall, welcome back to the program. I am really looking forward to the conversation today. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for having me back.
Dr. McCall was here a few episodes ago. We talked about his book, Mary, Intimate Witness to God's Love Incarnate. We'll mention that again at the end. And that book, both books available at his website, lewismccallinternational.com. All that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Your book highlights some of the low points in David's life, including his failures, poor decisions that he made. With all of that, how was that David called by God a man after my own heart?
Yes, it's strange because he did have a lot of downs as well as his ups.
Yes.
And he made some poor decisions. He was not a man that was totally calm. There was a time that he wanted to go and wipe out a village. Not only that, when he was in his fugitive stage and working in part with the Philistines, because he thought, well, if I hang out with the Philistines, King Saul will not come look for me here. He just killed everyone, men, women, children, animals, because he didn't want to leave anyone to tell the tale so that the Philistines would catch on to him. But what makes him, God called him a man after my own heart. So why would God say that about him when he had all of these flaws? Well, he owned up. He took responsibility for his mistakes, for his failures. And he understood the heart of God, that God was merciful and full of grace. And one example is, you know, he had a child out of wedlock. It was a low point. He murdered the husband of the woman that he had adultery with, had him murdered, and had a child. And the prophet came and told him that God's judgment was that that child was going to die. So for a whole week, he just prostrated himself down on the ground, would not eat, and he prayed before God because he thought God can yet be merciful. And as it happened, the child eventually died after a week. And he got up, cleaned up, and he went before the Ark of the Covenant, and he worshiped God. At another time, this was late in his career when he had built an empire. Instead of being a vassal state, they became an empire all the way up to the Euphrates River in what is now modern-day Iraq and down toward Egypt and surrounding places. He subdued people, and he built an empire, and he took in tribute and so on. And so he got the idea, I'll build a temple for this ark, because what he did, he was the first one the only one to bring the ark to Jerusalem, and he put it in his neighborhood, which was called the City of David. But he had it in a curtain, unlike the tabernacle tent that Moses had, which separated that ark of the golden ark of the covenant off from everyone else, and only the chief priest could go there once a year behind that curtain. He did that, and so he was at his height, and then he decided, I'm doing real good here. And he decided he would hold a census to find out how many potential warriors he had, people who could bear arms. His general was not able to talk him out of it. It took about 10 months for them to finish that census. And then the prophet came to him and told him, you've really upset God with this. And you can choose among three choices for your punishment, because he said, you're not going to die. God has forgiven you, but there are consequences. So you can choose amongst three things. And the thing that he chose was that there would be 3 days of a pestilence. Well, after 70,000 men died during that time, he went to where the ark was, and he saw this angel that was doing the killing, and he was told to he wanted to confess before God. This is one of the things that makes him a man after God's own heart. And he told God, he said, look, don't kill these people. These are your sheep. It was me that caused the problem. And he said, kill me. Kill my family and kill my father's family. So he was willing to take the consequences.
Yes.
Who else does that?
Exactly.
You know, today's politicians and whatnot, they want to avoid accountability.
At all costs.
They want to be pardoned.
Exactly.
He didn't do that. He took responsibility. And he also wrote many of the Psalms, which were songs. And, you know, he had a heart for God and for the ways of God. And so that came through. It was something that started when he was just a young boy, and he was brought in to play his harp when an evil spirit got into King Saul to sort of calm him down, change the atmosphere. So those are the things that made him a man after God's own heart, despite the problems he had within his own family and within the nation.
The book is David, Man After God's Own Heart by Dr. Lewis McCall. The book available wherever books are sold. Dr. McCall's website is his name, lewismccallinternational.com. Like on our website, the book's of course available wherever books are sold. What inspired you to retell David's story from the perspective of an aging king looking back on his life? It gives us sort of a unique perspective at that point. Why did you approach it that way?
I didn't want to do what other people had done. And a lot of other books about David focus on, you know, Goliath. But I tell his whole story, letting him tell the story. He's, you know, he's somewhat infirm. He's in his last days of his life.
Yes.
And he obviously had a circulation problem with his blood. He was cold all the time. You know, they'd pile up sheepskins and stuff on him. It wouldn't make him any warmer. So his men, the senior officials in the kingdom, they got the idea, let's get a nice young virgin to come and lay with him and give him her heat. And so they went out and they found someone named Abishag from the village of Shunem. So she was called the Shunammite. And he begrudgingly agreed to this. And so you might imagine that, okay, if you're spending all of your time in bed with this this naked woman who's keeping you warm, you might begin to talk. And so he asked her about, you know, where she came from and her life. And then she asked him to tell her about his journey. And so that is how the story begins, with a lot of flashbacks, obviously, to get to these different times in his life.
David's journey spans from shepherd boy to warrior to king. Which stage of his life did you find most compelling to explore, and why was that? What was it that really interested you, maybe more than some of the others? You were really caught up in the storyline.
Yes, but, you know, he didn't have quite the overwhelming success that he had always known. In fact, he was almost killed on the battlefield by another Philistine giant. There were about six of them. These were like the super warriors of the Philistines. And apparently he must have had a blood sugar problem or something. He started to faint, and his weapon went down, and he was about to hit the ground. And one of his mighty men, Abishai, the brother of his general, ran over to him, caught him, sat him down, and then Abishai killed that giant. And then in different battles over a period of time, they wiped out the rest of those giants. In fact, one of his nephews killed one of those giants. You might wonder, why are there giants there when Joshua, when he came into the land, they sort of had a blitzkrieg, and they killed a lot of giants. When Moses brought the people to the land and sent spies in, 12 spies in, 10 of them came back and said, we're like grasshoppers in our own eyes with these guys. They're giants. Well, they did have giants. They had some physical giants. And you might wonder, why weren't they all killed? Well, apparently God in his wisdom left some for David and his people to deal with later. And they were in the land of the Philistines. God sent them there to take over Canaan and get the Canaanites out. But in listing the Canaanites, the Philistines were not listed. There's a reason for that. Part of it was those giants. The giant Goliath had four other brothers who were giants. So you can go back and speculate how these giants came about, and there are hints of that in the Bible. But it provided the springboard for David to become a national hero. But in his later life, after almost being killed by a giant, his men told him, look, you're the light of Israel. You cannot go out and fight with us anymore. We want you to stay in the rear guard. So he didn't even get to go and watch the battles. He had to stay home. And so that was, in a way, it was humiliating to him that he had become a liability on the battlefield. And so what did he do? He focused in on building things, on writing these psalms. And in the end, God gave him the design for the temple. He couldn't build it because God said, your hands are too bloody. You killed a lot of guys in your time.
Yes.
So I don't want you to build this. But he gave him the design for it. And that he turned over to his son Solomon, who built a temple. Not only that, even though he could not build the temple, because he had built an empire and amassed so much wealth, he didn't keep it all personally. He put aside the equivalent of billions of dollars of gold and other things for the temple, just waiting for his son to build it. And that was the first and great temple, Solomon's temple of Israel.
With us back in the program is Dr. Lewis McCall. We're talking about his new book, David, Man After God's Own Heart. His website is lewismccallinternational.com. He's been on the program before. You'll find the program in our archives, or just Google it. Mary, Intimate Witness to God's Love Incarnate was the book. Both books available at his website. Of course, wherever books are sold, a link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You described that 13-year period when Saul hunted David. How did that prolonged season of adversity shape David's character and faith? What role did that have on who David was, who he became?
Well, he got depressed.
Okay. Yes.
First of all, he was hiding out in caves and in forests, and he was by himself to begin with. And it wasn't until later that his clan, his family, and other people who were really kind of the dregs in society gathered around him, and he became the leader of them. At his greatest point with that group, he only had 400 to 600 fighting men. And Saul would come after him with basically the commandos of his army, 3,000 men trying to surround him and kill him. So he had to get through that, those times of depression. And so some of his psalms were about that, dealing with that depression and moving to a point of praise to God for answering his prayers and keeping him. Another low point that he had was he decided, I'm going to go and try to hang out with the Philistines, because certainly Saul is going to kill me. And it didn't work out so well. Some of the Philistines told the king, hey, that's David, the one that they said killed 10,000s. And so being found out, what he did was he played like he had lost his mind. He scratched at the city gates, and he let spittle and whatnot come down on his beard. And basically the king said, we don't have enough crazy people here that you have to bring this guy here. Get him out of here. So yeah, that was another low point that he had. Another low point was when one of his sons, Absalom, decided to have a coup and take over. David had to flee Jerusalem, and he was rather sad that his forces defeated his son, and his son was killed. So much so that his soldiers kind of felt the shame and, you know, tails between their legs when they were coming back from that battle. And his general told him, he said, look, you better buck up here, or it's going to be worse than ever. You're going to lose the kingdom. Get out there and encourage your troops. So he sucked it up and went out and did that. It just shows that he was human. He loved his kids. He put them in positions of authority, but they didn't all work out. And that was part of, you know, his regrets.
Yes. It's a remarkable story. The story is David, a man after God's own heart, by Dr. Lewis McCall, our guest on the program. David experienced both extraordinary victories, devastating family turmoil. What do you think modern readers and modern leaders can learn from that contrast?
What they can learn from that is the admission that they are not perfect. Everything that they do is not the wisest and best thing. You know, when General Eisenhower was preparing for D-Day over in the United Kingdom, he wrote a letter basically of apology, taking responsibility for failure, assuming that the D-Day invasion would fail. So he learned humility by preparing for failure. And David, yes, he messed up quite a bit. But he always came back to his rock, his centering his place in God. And that is something that modern leaders need to do. President Abraham Lincoln, he had depression, but yet he had to also become a man of faith. And So out of that, you get things like the Gettysburg Address, which kids memorize in school today.
Yes. There are lessons there for all of us, leader or leaders or not. The friendship between David and Jonathan, one of the most powerful relationships in Scripture. How did you approach portraying that bond in the book?
Well, that is a story that has always stuck with me. I saw an Italian language film many years ago about that relationship. I've never been able to find it again. But Jonathan was the crown prince. Saul had four sons, but Jonathan was the oldest, and he was the crown prince. But he loved David, and David loved him. And there's a scene where Jonathan gives David his royal clothing and his sword, and he basically says, "I'm going to be next to you. You're going to be king. I know that, but I'm going to be your number two, and we're going to run the country together." And in the course of time, when King Saul, Jonathan's father, kept chasing David down, they had a final parting, and he knew that, he may not see him again. And the Bible says they just kind of kissed, and they both wept, big heaving sobs,
Yes.
for what, could not be. And then when Jonathan dies along with his father and two of his brothers in battle, David mourns. He mourns for Jonathan and also for the kingdom. But that was the thing that turned things around. He then became king of Judah, which was his native tribe and one of the larger tribes in Israel. And after a 7-year civil war with the northern tribes, who were still under Saul's remaining son, he became king of a united Israel when the northern tribes came to him and said, "Okay, the prophet said that you were going to be king over Israel. Here we are." So that was a hard thing to lose Jonathan, because they really loved each other. And it was said that the love that they had for each other exceeded the love that a man has for a woman. It is not to say that they were homosexual or anything, but that it was
Yes.
a deep love, respectful love.
You're right about David bringing the Ark of Covenant to Jerusalem. What did that moment mean? What did it represent spiritually as well as politically at the time?
Well, after Joshua brought the Ark across the Jordan River, and miraculously the river backed up so that the people could go away, go across on dry ground. It stayed in Gilgal, where they camped after crossing, just for a short time. And then after the blitzkrieg that he did, he put it sort of in the center of the land at a place called Shiloh. And that's where it stayed for generations. It was subsequently taken by the Philistines in a battle with Saul that Saul lost. He didn't die, but they lost. And the ark, which they tried to use as a magic charm, was taken by the Philistines. So it stayed with the Philistines for some years. And then the Philistines had to get rid of it, because everywhere the ark went, there was pestilence. Thousands upon thousands of people died. And so they decided, let's send this thing back to the Israelis. But just to make sure that this wasn't by chance, let's put a couple of milk cows on this cart to pull it. No man there to drive them or guide them. And we'll keep the calves nearby. So if the milk cows hear the calves calling out for their moms for milk, and they turn toward the calves, then we know that it was all just bad luck. It was chance. But if they go on down toward Israel, then we'll know, this was the God of Israel. And so that's what happened. And it moved around to a couple of different cities in Israel with some of the same results, because people did not honor the ark. You know, they tried to peek inside it at yes. one place and so on. So people died. So it stayed with a man named Abinadab for about 20 years. Anyway, David, after he's been successful in uniting the country and beginning to build his empire, he decides, I'm going to bring that here to Jerusalem. It had never been in Jerusalem before. So he went, he took 30,000 soldiers with him, 30,000. That's a big difference from the 400 to 600 men that he used to have. 30,000 soldiers, he took priests, he took musicians and everything. And the mistake they made was they tried to carry it on a cart like the Philistines had done. And they didn't get very far. And one of the sons of the man who kept it for 20 years, he must have kept it, you know, pretty much like freight, shut away. He reached out to steady it when the oxen had stumbled, and he immediately was stricken by God and died. That made David afraid. It also made him angry with God. So what they did was they put it in the care of a man named Obed-Edom, who lived nearby. He was also a Levite. And David went back to Jerusalem to figure out what had gone wrong. So after studying scriptures and whatnot, they realized that there's a protocol to moving this ark. It's not to be carried on a cart. There were rings on the sides of it to put gold-clad rods through to carry it. And there was a group of priests that were supposed to carry it, porter it on their shoulders. So after 3 months, he hears of all the blessing to this guy that they left the ark with. And so he goes back there, determined to bring it to Jerusalem. And he learns some things from that guy. And they bring it back, and he is so excited and exuberant as they enter Jerusalem that he just kind of dances out of his clothes. That's one of the things that made him a man after God's own heart. He wasn't concerned with the royal propriety or anything. He just, without reservation, worshiped God exuberantly. And he set an example for the people. It's okay to do that. And so that was a key difference.
What drew you to David's story? How did writing this book impact your own faith journey? It's enlightening for us as readers. What was it like for you? What drew you to the story, and what impact did it have on your faith?
Well, my wife and I have been to Israel several times, and on one of our trips, we went to a place where it was said that that's where the house of Obed-Edom was. And it was on a little hill. You could see from that all the way back to Jerusalem in the distance. And so you had an idea of what had gone on. It was a few years after that I felt moved to write this story about David in a way that others had not done. One of the features I have in the book is that as he's telling his life story to Abishag, who's in bed with him to keep him warm, well, basically he includes in his retelling a number of his psalms. And so that's seeded through the book. And that way you get to hear him not only as a memoir, but to memorialize these psalms that he wrote that came at sometimes times of stress, sometimes of victory. It gave you a picture into his life.
Just an amazing book, a remarkable book. You start reading and you want to continue to read the rest of the book. The book is David, Man After God's Own Heart. Mention the other book before that we've talked about, Mary, Intimate Witness to God's Love Incarnate. What are you working on now? You have this ability to take these biblical figures, bring them to life through the power of your storytelling. No pressure, but what are you working on now? Do you have another book that you're thinking about?
Well, indeed I do. I have 7 books now. And so for the 8th book, I'm going to write about the life of Joseph. And I have a title for it, but I'll keep that close to my vest. And I'm sure in a few months I'll be able to get back to that. Next month I'm going to the London Book Fair, where I'll be presenting all of my books.
Oh, fantastic.
And, I've also had a number of offers by major motion picture studios to acquire and adapt my books into motion pictures, and particularly they're interested in the book about Mary, but they're also interested in this book about David and other books that I've done. So I'm sort of working my way through that, and I want it to be in the right hands and have the right treatment.
That is a major market now, faith films, faith television series. What a market for that. And both of these stories that we've talked about, Mary as well as David, really would come alive and would be great in motion picture presentations. And certainly hope that works out and done properly. And I'll be anxious to hear how that progresses. And you'll find out about the new book by going to his website, lewismccallinternational.com. Our guest, Dr. Lewis McCall. This book, David, Man After God's Own Heart, is now available. Mary, available, as well as the other books available. Doctor, it's always a pleasure having you on the program. Keep writing. We'll keep talking about them. I love having you with us on the program. An amazing storyteller that just brings you in and you feel like you're there and experiencing sort of an eyewitness of biblical history, bringing it to life. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
It is our pleasure. I want to thank King Pages Press for arranging our conversation. The author's marketing consultant, results-oriented, making sure your work gets the attention it truly deserves. King Pages Press. Once again, our guest on the program today is Dr. Lewis McCall. The book is David, Man After God's Own Heart. His website is lewismccallinternational.com. All this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.